Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Thursday, January 22nd, the year of our Lord 2026, and this is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're having a fantastic week. I know some weather is about to hit just about the whole country, especially down south. I'm praying that there's no ice. I've been down south during an ice storm before and not looking forward to doing it again in the near future. It's just tough, and kind of especially with the power situation. So I know many of you have gotten generators and things like that, just from feedback through the ITG chat box during the show, and just hoping for the best. And it's almost better to have snow, right? Because it doesn't wreck things as much. You're just kind of out of school and out of work. You can't drive, and it's kind of a fun day. But ice is a different story. So hopefully things are going well. I just want to say I was thinking about everybody and all that good stuff. Big women's basketball game tonight out in Oklahoma. 7:30 p.m. tip on ESPN. Number 2, South Carolina plays number 16, Oklahoma. The Sooners have dropped 3 in a row to Ole Miss, Kentucky, and LSU. The Gamecocks 19-1 overall, 5-0 in the SEC. They have not lost since dropping a non-conference game to conference opponent Texas earlier this year. They avenged that loss at the Colonial Life Arena last week, then went up to Coppin State on Sunday and won, and back into conference action against the Sooners, who are still 16th in the country this evening. Oklahoma really supports women's sports quite a bit, so I expect a pretty good crowd at the Lloyd Noble Center out there in Norman as South Carolina comes to town. So we'll see how that all shakes out for Dawn Staley and her group tonight. As they are a 77.9% predictive win favorite, according to the ESPN. I guess it's the BPI. I'm not really a fan of those things, either football or basketball. I think that the data is a little bit flawed, but some people are, and who am I to rob you of that information? So, on to the football topic today, we're going to talk about money. This is always fun, right? Money matters in the world of college football these days, with the transfer portal, with player retention, with everything. And it's certainly a topic of conversation at the University of South Carolina. And I'll start off by saying this. Initially, when all this happened, and this was part of the reason, for those that don't know, I started an NIL collective, Carolina Rise. That's part of the reason I started that, because I sensed that just from talking to people and all that, and thankfully Garnet Trust was there too, part of that team now, and I couldn't be happier with my experience with them and what they've done and how hard they work. I think, you look around the country, Arkansas is an example of this, Oregon State. There's some schools that have gotten into a mess with the collectives, and South Carolina's been very fortunate that they have good people and people that work hard, know what they're doing, and just really have a get it done attitude. That's what you have to have in that business. But part of the reasons we started it is I just kind of sensed that, there wasn't a lot of I don't want to say desire, but there was a lot of, well, wait a minute, how do we do this on the part of the university? And that happened at a lot of places. I mentioned Arkansas. They started out like gangbusters in the NIL space. And if you look at what they do in football now, not basketball and baseball, but football, and they of course had a coaching change. It's tough. Their athletic director, Hunter Yurecek, said it. They just have not had the money, and people think Walmart money and Tyson chicken and all that, but that's not really NIL. It's really the schools that have done the best either have like unlimited resources, or like in the case of Ole Miss, their fans really embraced it. Like they saw that as their ticket to go. And then like Missouri changed their state law earlier than everybody else, and they were able to do things in-house. So there's different reasons why various schools are good with NIL. It's not like it used to be where it's, oh, these businesses are here, the economy's good, so let's rock and roll. That's just not that hasn't been the reality in that. But at South Carolina, the fans have embraced it, and the people that can support it have. It was just slow happening. So I'll take you back to the off season of 2022. The Gamecocks lost some players out of the portal. Jordan Birch, Marshawn Lloyd, Jaheim Bell, all key players on that big finish for 2022. They lost Juice Wells the next year. They did retain him that first year, and Spencer Rattler. But you remember the running back situation? How they went after some guys and lost them. I mean, it was not. South Carolina was in trouble. But the thing people have to realize is in this ever evolving world of college football we're in now, you don't have to stay in the same spot. It doesn't just because you're there at one point doesn't mean you have to stay there. And that's what's different because, historically the sport just in how you build a program and all that used to take a long time. It doesn't anymore. But it also doesn't take very long, as we all found out this past season, to get knocked back down the ladder a bit, right? But that's general football. This is about spending. So the next offseason, when they brought in Rocket Sanders and they brought in a lot of good players out of the portal, found some guys really. That worked out pretty well. They didn't spend a ton doing it, didn't have a ton to spend, but they made it work. They made it work. Part of that was because Lenore Sellers was the starting quarterback. And that's why when people talked about, and thank goodness they didn't go get pay a bunch of money to KJ Jefferson to come in and play. Part of that was because, Sellers was not necessarily a proven player. He was a redshirt freshman and wasn't that expensive, quite frankly. And quarterback is for everybody the most expensive position on the roster. So they were able to go and divide up resources in other areas. So there was that. Then the next season, this past season, that was on par with everybody else. And South Carolina and LSU, and I don't know what, I'm assuming they handed Lane Kiffin a bunch of money when he got there, but under Brian Kelly, South Carolina and LSU sort of spent the same. Same with Alabama. Georgia got a little bit of a discount because they're Georgia, but they're all those schools kind of spend in the same stratosphere. And South Carolina got there over time. It wasn't always that way. So a lot of people have put in a lot of work and sort of, ironed it out. I think Jeremiah Donati and his team have been fantastic with all the sports in that department. Still, there's not an unlimited amount. But that's the case with 95% of the schools in the country. You got to kind of pick and choose. And then this offseason, it's gone up even further as prices have for some reason, risen. Cap, right? It's like in Dumb and Dumber when they're going into the Rockies and they were going the wrong way. They were in Nebraska again. It's like that John Denver's full of crap, man. It's like that cap's full of crap, man. So it's gone up. South Carolina's right there with everybody else as far as spending goes. But what I hear often is, Beamer needs to just spend what it takes and stuff like that. Now, a lot of people that say that are frustrated based on last offseason, where, there were guys like Justice Haynes and that they weren't going to. I mean, look, Justice Haynes is probably going to Michigan anyway. Obviously, the rumor is he commanded a lot of money he's a running back. He ended up getting hurt too. I mean, that's the other thing about paying a running back a bunch of money. Now, am I saying that Rasul Faison was as good as Justice Haynes? No. But would Justice Haynes have done as well behind South Carolina's offensive line compared to Michigan's? Probably not. Still, that frustrated some fans. The KC Concepcion thing, seeing him light it up at A&M. Number one, I don't know if South Carolina had they met his amount as bad as the passing game was, as much as Mike Shula seemed to refuse to throw the ball sometimes, and then Lenore Sellers couldn't always find the open guys. I don't know that, his numbers at South Carolina, even with the money, would have made a difference at all. He was really good in the return game, but South Carolina had a pretty good return game last year too. So. But I understand the frustration, and there was the center from Vanderbilt, Jordan White, I think is his name, and that guy he was from Liberty, so nobody would have shot off fireworks had they gotten him. Maybe that's one they'd like to have back. I thought the Andrew Jones guy they lost to Ole Miss that was from Grambling, that was more of a closer to home thing, though Ole Miss did pay him more. I think that guy's going to be a fantastic player. But all in all, I was, you looked at it, and South Carolina felt good about the players they had coming back. They did get some help out of the portal in Brandon Cisse. They won a battle for Troy Pikes financially there at the end because they needed defensive tackles. They got Brownlow Dindy, Justin Onwuchekwue. I mean, it's going to end up that portal class last offseason is going to end up making a bigger impact than people think. I think that we all kind of are still in the mindset with portal, kind of like it used to be with JUCOs, where, oh, it's got to happen right now. And when you look at South Carolina's portal class last year, there were a lot of younger guys with lots of eligibility left, lots of runway left. And so I still think, all in all, that 2025 portal class, you're going to look back on it and be happy. That's my prediction for it as collectively. Some guys take their lumps this past year out of that class. Yes. Were some guys flat out not that good? Yes. And most of those are gone. And then some guys had injuries. Jaylen Brown, very disappointing injury. George Wilson as well, out of the transfer portal. Wilson's coming back next season. We talked to Edge yesterday. But I understand the frustration, and it gets compounded when you lose. You know, everything is magnified, and I understand. I'm not, sometimes on the message boards, I'll come across a little bit more militant about it, and that's why I'm glad that I have these venues to speak, because I speak a lot different than I write. And you have to understand that I do understand where people are coming from with that, because you're losing. You're 4-8 and 1-7, and you look like crap on offense. And the offensive linemen they signed out of the portal last year, just all sort of collectively disappointed. There's one back, Nolan Hay is back, and he hardly played. And actually, he was pretty decent when he played. I got him penciled in behind Carter Miller as the backup center next year. But who knows? A lot of people say a lot of good things about him. He's a Texas guy, so Randy Clements, and I'm not saying they'd be biased toward anyone from Texas, but I'm sure they'll pay attention to him. So who knows if he may sneak in and play guard, or they move Carter. I don't know. Offensive line, we are going to talk about that from now until August. But I understand the frustration about the portal class last cycle. I really, really do. And the other part of it was it didn't have the immediate impact of 2024 when you had guys that were here for a year like Rocket Sanders and Kyle Kennard and Demetrius Knight that kind of just glued the whole thing together. And that didn't happen. I mean, even out of that portal class for 2024, Delvon Campbell was a late addition, was in and out of the lineup, kind of had some injuries. At the end of the year, though, boy, he saved the day against Missouri, didn't he? And had some really big moments. I think I think he was on the Panthers practice squad this year. Good player. So you had guys like that. And then they had gotten Josh Simon the year before, from Western Kentucky, and the local guy, South Carolina guy, coming back, and he was a star. So I get it. Last not 2004, sorry, 2024 went really, really well. And a lot of the portal guys hit 2025. There are a lot of younger guys that are coming back. There were guys that were disappointing, and the season was disappointing. And the offensive line was disappointing yet again. So, and that was a mix of portal guys that didn't work out, and also what they call homegrown guys, that most of them are gone now. And Lenore Sellers regressed. There's some stats that do say how good he is when Mike Shula's not calling the plays versus when Shula was. But that was on an episode of the show. Will Helms on Twitter actually did the research, put that out. I've been following him for years. It's really pretty awesome. But so a lot went wrong. But I understand, this portal class, because South Carolina had some immediate needs. Yet again, lines of scrimmage were huge. This is a larger portal class than they had last year. It's a smaller high school class. I understand the sense of urgency and the feeling out there, back to the money thing, that you need to go spend what it takes. John Strickland said it. You need to go spend the money and make it happen. Well, I can report to you that South Carolina did, in a lot of instances. Now, they didn't spend stupidly, because you can't. If you spend stupidly, you better hit, and you better spend. They got to be interested too. And you know that's the bottom line, because if you spend stupidly in the portal or with retention or whatever, however you spend stupidly, you're probably not going to win. You got to be smart. And there's no correlation right now between schools that spend the most and winning championships as far as non-blue bloods go. And that gets me to my next point. Ohio State spent quite a bit a couple of years ago. A lot of that was most 90% of it was retention. And then they got some nice parts. They only signed six portal guys heading into last year. One was Keenan Nelson, who has since gotten the portal again. But you got Judkins, and you got the safety, and they got the quarterback from Kansas State that won the national championship. They put it all together, got on a roll, and won it. But they're a blue blood. They're part of the privileged in college football, right? Same with Miami this past year. Spent a lot. Boy, they put together a great team. I think Miami had a top three roster, just roster wise, in America. And just like Ohio State, kind of screwed around, lost a couple of games they probably shouldn't have. And then close ones to SMU and Louisville. Didn't even make the ACC championship game yet again, but then got on a roll, started playing up to their capability. Their defense was dominant. Offense got enough. And then before they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Indiana Hoosiers, they played for a national title for the first time since 2002, the 2002 season. When they got upset by Ohio State out at the Fiesta Bowl. So, look, man, that's good. The blue bloods go out there and spend what they want and put it together. But look, then look at Texas. Texas was preseason number one. They're the Citrus Bowl champs, 10-3 record. Same record as Illinois last year. Now, is that fair? I don't know. Texas, had they not scheduled Ohio State and scheduled some can of Vienna sausages or whatever, would they have been in the playoff? Yeah. As well as they were playing down the stretch, could they have won it? Maybe. But Texas also had to have a miraculous rally to beat Mississippi State on the road. They went to overtime at Kentucky and only scored 16 points. That was not a complete football team for the whole season, and they had spent all the money. They're spending it again. Was Texas A&M, with all the money they spent, that's one of the best seasons they've ever had. But man, if I were an Aggie, boy, maybe it was the schedule. Because the last few times out against power competition, they got outscored 30-3 at home by the dang Gamecocks and had to have a miracle rally to win. Speaking of miracle rallies, they lost to Texas again in Austin. And then Miami held them to 3 points on their home field in a huge game. They couldn't score. They just kind of. Everybody was waiting for the A&M meltdown in November. It didn't really happen until later, but it did again. One of the biggest spenders. Southern Cal spends more than just about anybody. They haven't even sniffed the playoff. So there's no correlation between these big spending blue bloods. But I don't even know that the blue blood thing applies to South Carolina. I think what South Carolina's got to look at, and what the good idea is, you got to look at teams that are kind of your peers historically, that don't have those advantages, that do well in the portal and with their spending, and that would be Ole Miss and Missouri. Now, Ole Miss, Missouri, South Carolina are all different as far as how the programs are set up, the access to talent. The history, the collective setup, the in-house setup, it's all different. But a lot of the same theories are applicable with some adjustments. And I'm getting to how this applies to this portal class here in a second. Ole Miss, and I'm going to talk about Ole Miss under Kiffin. I don't know, given the drama out there and Pete Golding taking over, maybe he has a different philosophy, but Ole Miss under Kiffin, they did a good job scouting players in the portal. They assigned a valuation for them, not an eval. The evaluation is how good are they? The valuation is what are they worth? And they stuck to it. And if somebody wanted more, they moved on. Now, you look at the last couple of years, some of their guys, like Walter Nolan 2 years ago, pretty high ticketed players, so like the receiver from Penn State, South Carolina kind of flirted with that went there, I think, in the second portal window last year. Maybe it was the first. You know, Wallace, Harrison Wallace, Trey Wallace. They probably were willing to spend a little more for him, and it paid off for them. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and they didn't go over. They never went over that, right? The only time they went over it, from what Neil McCready, who's an Ole Miss insider who knows more about that program than you know, he's forgotten more about that program than I'll ever know, said Juice Wells was the one that they did kind of spend more on, and it blew up in their face. Kiwan Lacy, that's a great player. That was not a big time spend. He was at Missouri. We'll talk about next. Trinidad Chambliss, you know the story there. I'm not going to hammer that in. That's an outlier. You know, you go get a guy from Ferris State late, really wasn't even in your plans, and you bring him in, and all of a sudden, Austin Simmons is, if Austin Simmons, who they really liked, who's now ironically at Missouri, if Austin Simmons has started the whole year, I don't think Ole Miss makes the playoff. You know, Trinidad Chambliss was just an X factor. But hey, sometimes that works out in your favor if you evaluate well and stick to your guns and put it all together. And it worked like gangbusters. That's why I thought Florida was absolutely stupid. And I'm not going to rehash this because I've said it before, for wanting to hire an NFL GM. It's written that that's one of the reasons that Lane Kiffin didn't take that job, is that he wouldn't have been in control of his roster. Lane Kiffin's in the portal era, one of the greatest roster builders in college football. He and his folks. Why would you not want that at the University of Florida? See, people talk about ADs and how they can hurt you. It's, you know, you're responsible for hiring good coaches, obviously. But then there's other ways ADs can hurt you that are very, much more inexcusable and sinister than screwing up a hire. And so that's unbelievable. I pray for John Summerall, the Gator Nation, that things work out down there. Maybe it will. Who knows? Yeah, so Kiffin really had a good system to do it. You saw how it paid off. And it wasn't all go spend for big names. Sure, there were some big names that went to Ole Miss, but a lot of it was get the best guys and stick to your guns with the money, because then the money always works out. You know, and I think South Carolina in this class, you know, had some of that. You know, unlike last offseason where it was a lot of, you know, well, you know, we're good with our guys. We're not going to spend, blah, blah, blah. You know, kind of like Ole Miss, South Carolina was willing to spend if they saw the value, right? And they had more resources. So obviously prices went up. So that was a good thing there. But Ole Miss did a good job with that. And it's primarily a portal program. They do recruit from the high school ranks some in their state. But in that state, you have a smaller population, and you have Mississippi State there. And some kids grow up wanting to go there. Some kids want to go to Ole Miss. Some kids are bound and determined to go out of state. I've seen that for years in Mississippi. And so you don't have the base. You have to go out of state, and you have to hit the portal hard. And, you know, if you look at sort of the apex of both Mississippi State and Ole Miss, you know, I think we're at the apex of Ole Miss right now. They're as good as they've been since the 60s. And this, they're as good as they've ever been in this era of football. Heavy portal, heavy transfer. With Mississippi State under Jackie Sherrill, won the SEC East in 98. They were really good in the 90s all the way through the early 2000s. They were heavy JUCO. They took advantage of, they were almost a Kansas State South. You know, Dan Mullen won there and Mike Leach won there at Mississippi State because of scheme. But that's a scheme and fit. But that's a different topic for a different era. I don't know that you can still do that these days. So we'll keep it on topic of the roster building. Mississippi schools do well with transfers historically. And so you have to. So bravo to Lane Kiffin. Pete Golding, maybe they continue that. I know the collective there, the Grove Collective, is very strong. They're all involved with it. Keith Carter, the AD, they believe in it. Their fans are behind it. So we'll see how it evolves for them through the years. I looked at their schedule on the show yesterday, and it's they got LSU game three. It's kind of interesting because with the schedule flipping, kind of like Kentucky has to come back to South Carolina next year, LSU has to go back to Oxford. in week three. They open with Louisville in Nashville. They got two games in Nashville. Ole Miss. Bizarre schedule for next year. Anyway, so that's how they did it. And I don't know that it's applicable to South Carolina. I don't think South Carolina needs to be that transfer heavy. I don't think they have to be, but certain elements of what they do, you can see kind of bubbling up in what South Carolina's doing. In other words, you kind of put values on guys and you stick to it, but you're willing to go get a guy that you really want. And I think that happened in several instances this portal offseason for the Gamecocks, and rightfully so. And I think that should make people happy that we're worried that, just wish and a prayer. We're not, there's no sure thing when it comes to players. But if you can get close to a sure thing, and you could pay up and upgrade your football team, you need to do that. And I think the Gamecocks did. So Missouri is a little different. Missouri has a little bit more high school recruiting. They do a little bit more within their state. It's kind of tough because the talent pockets in Missouri are over in St. Louis, and East St. Louis is actually in Illinois. But they do get players out of there. And then in the Kansas City area, that's way over there, and it's bordering Kansas. Now, Kansas and Kansas State really aren't threats, but Oklahoma has made a living in Kansas City through the years. Nebraska used to, but Mizzou's done a good job with that. So it's a little bit more than Ole Miss, but they still do the portal. Now, they're a little different in the sense they're very, very good at lower level players that can play. Eli Drinkwitz does a fantastic job with that. Ole Miss does too, but it's a little bit more pronounced and a little bit more proven at Missouri. You're talking about, especially at running back. I mean, they told Kewan Lacy to go because they had Ahmad Hardy. You kind of look at what they do on defense. There's guys from smaller schools that come through. I mean, Trotter, West Virginia is not a smaller school, but Jeremiah Trotter was a really good player. And they're willing to pay up for certain guys. Trotter was one. Shane Beamer talked about that, and he's a linebacker this season. And boy, he was better than people thought he would be. I don't know, or Josiah Trotter, not Jeremiah. Jeremiah's his brother. The brother played at Clemson. Dad's Jeremiah Trotter, that played for the Eagles from Philadelphia. And then, of course, Damon Wilson, who's since moved on. They were willing to go there, and they let a. And what they also did was, and this is tough because South Carolina does not do this, and I'm not saying they should. They let a young five-star guy go. They let him go to Nebraska to get more money. Williams Nwiere, a big recruiting win. He was there for a minute. He's go Big Red, right? Cash the check. South Carolina is a little bit more proactive and not as willing to cut bait with a good young player. But with the money that kid was asking for, I think South Carolina would have. But that just hasn't come up. But Eli Drinkwitz does a really good job. And you look, they're winning. They didn't have their quarterback most of the year this past year, but they were a really good football team that still won. I mean, he's got a tremendous record, not just against the Gamecocks. Now, have they beaten a bunch of winning teams? No, they've been fortunate with the schedule, but it's Missouri, man. And they face challenges. Until Gary Pinkel got there and started turning it around, they were not very good. So, and then going into the SEC was another challenge. They've handled it well. And Drinkwitz knows how to get it done roster wise there. And they use their NIL and they use their revenue share and their money. And they're very, very good at doing that. And like I said, what they do is they hit the lower levels and then sprinkle that big money around for guys that are just no-brainers. And so that's paid off for them. So that brings us to South Carolina. There's elements of that too in this portal class because you have some guys that South Carolina did pay for. And I'll rattle them off. I'm not giving amounts, but these were wins. Jacarius Peak. And according to need too, some people were like, well, they should go get a big time running back. Well, Ohio State kind of through back channels came after Matt Fuller, and they had to retain him. Juwan Howell's pretty good. Isaiah Augustov redshirted last year, and they did sign three. And you're not going to get Rocket Sanders every year. Rocket Sanders this year Maybe not because of his injury situation, but Rocket Sanders would have cost a lot more than what they paid a couple of years ago. And running back, you just don't do it. You know, very few schools, when everybody was talking about running backs wanting all this money, very few schools actually paid. I think Texas did for Hollywood Smothers and Keelan Black, but nobody else really took that bait this offseason, is my understanding. And then you look at the NFL, same thing. I do think in college, a great running back can impact you a lot better, more so than maybe in the NFL. Same sport, different game. You've heard me say that. Oh, and Justice Haynes, Georgia Tech probably paid up for him. Do I think he got $1 million to go to Georgia Tech? Nah, I don't think so. Brent Key's pretty smart, but that's that. But you know, your needs. You know, what are your true needs? Not what everybody wants. That there's wants and there's needs. That's the way it is in life. I wanted the Desir twins from Florida State. Of course, that was a interesting negotiating ploy. They spent 2 weeks talking about getting in the portal. They finally got in the portal, and then they came back to Florida State, and they're worth it. You know, I wanted the Desir twins. I wanted Chaz Coleman, you know, at D end, along with a guy like Caleb Herring. I wanted Justice Haynes. You know, there's, you know, you want Cam Coleman. You know, you want everybody. But what do you need? And that those are the teams that win. You know, not just what you want, what you need. And you know, because if you just go after what you want, then you probably don't have the resources to get what you actually need. So Jacarius Peake was a very big win. I didn't when he got in the portal, you know, all of a sudden Alabama, A&M, Southern, all these schools started popping up. South Carolina nowhere to be found. And then we got the word that, hey, this could happen. And it did. South Carolina desperately needed offensive tackles. And he's one of the very best in the portal. Some say the best on film. He's a no-brainer. My man, Deputy Smitty, had a great breakdown of some plays of his. He's an absolute technician, athletic, strong. Not a 6'7" guy, you know, but good. There's really good 6'4" tackles out there. And certainly, I think to get him, when A&M was involved and, you know, other big spending schools, Ohio State, places like that, that's a win. That shows you South Carolina's willing to meet the need or to meet the financial, I guess, what it takes, you know, whatever it takes financially, to meet the moment financially. Big win at probably the biggest position of need. And so that was good. Caleb Herring. And I know there was the Chaz Coleman drama. And look, South Carolina was willing to pay Chaz Coleman quite handsomely. But if there's an extra whatever, and Tennessee wanted to do that, and you know, because like I said, he told Carolina he was going to take less money and go home to Ohio State. And then in the 11th hour, here comes Tennessee, and they got him. You know, they obviously needed some defensive linemen. He's got an elite first step, still a young player, but you know, there wasn't a lot of production there at Penn State, but obviously Deion Barnes coached him and knew what he was all about. South Carolina, and it looked like they were getting him, and that would have been on paper a big get. Obviously, if he tears it up for the Vols next year, it will end up being one that you go, gosh, wish you could have gotten him. But you know, they went and got Caleb Herring, and here was the issue with Caleb Herring. Alabama, Texas, some of those schools. Alabama actually ended up with Desmond Umezulu because Herring wasn't available, and you know he's coming in for a visit. Texas visit's coming up. You know Texas just spend and spend and spend. Concerned and Darren Usher and Shane Beamer and Deion Barnes, they shut it down. They would not have shut it down had they not been willing to pay the guy. You know, and Caleb Herring is a good, as I went through yesterday, defensive end that has production in the SEC. Best days are still in front of him. I don't think he's reached his ceiling. And so that's good. You know, Drew and Kelby Collins, this sounds a little weird, but Kentucky, they handed Will Stein a bunch of money. And you see Kentucky signing some guys that you're kind of wondering why they signed them. I was told they were spending more than they ever had, and they put together a portal class that their fans are excited about. with some names in it. And South Carolina topped that for those two brothers. Another set of siblings coming to South Carolina. Carter Miller had some Kentucky and big time interest from UCF, the center. So South Carolina at positions, and I do believe edge and D tackle too, but edge, which is the more expensive position. D tackle is expensive as well, but it's not as expensive as edge. Edge and offensive line, offensive tackle, center, edge, those were must-haves, right? You had to get a center, you had to get a left tackle, you had to get help for Dylan Stewart on the edge, and they did it, and they spent what they had to do. Everybody else, they spent what they had to do, but I can't say that they got in some bidding war and won it. Probably behind the scenes they did. I can tell you that with the current players, there were a ton of schools that came after all of Carolina's guys. And you got to count that too. We don't talk about that because it's not as exciting. It's not new. It's not the shiny new present, but they did what they had to do. But they also, I can tell you, like with regards to call them the big three, I think it's more the big two plus Nick Harbor. But since Nick was a five star and a big name, obviously, you got to include him. With those three, I can tell you they didn't break the bank. Some of the amounts people speculate about those three are way, way too high. Way too high. Fair, though, in my opinion, competitive, but way too high. And that counts too. So, if you're talking about money, I think that South Carolina is competitive with it. And I think a lot of people, or some people out there, still think it's the sisters of the poor, and it's not. Now, does that mean it's all good and, nobody should ever ask fans to join Garnet Trust or take advantage of one of their business partnerships at no cost to your business and things like that? And I'll talk about that on an episode of Coffee in the next couple of days. Okay, maybe what you can do next week. I've got some things there that you can help. Does that mean you don't need everybody helping? No, not at all. Because it's all supplementary over the cap. And the more Garnet Trust makes and the more business deals with student athletes that are cut, the more NIL money you have and the more competitive you can be. Looks like we're heading towards a world where there is no cap. Unfortunately, I'm just so sickened and disappointed by how all that's played out, but that's a different topic. But I can report to you now that South Carolina spent what they needed to spend, and I think they filled the major needs by doing so. And so that's a change from last year where, you heard a lot of, well, we're not going to overpay. And I'm not saying they overpaid this year. I think they met the market value of the players they valued, kind of like Ole Miss. And then you hope, like Missouri, that they hit on some lower level guys that they got. I think Rojo Poku from East Carolina is an offensive lineman to watch in that regard. Watch him. And then finally, and I'll wrap up with this, with the portal, South Carolina on defense, especially, and I talked about this yesterday. They've done a really good job of taking guys from other schools that may or may not have had a big recruiting rep, but good players just hadn't quite made their potential and getting them there. And that's coaching. That's Travion Robertson. That's Torian Gray. That's Clayton White and Trey Money. That's hopefully Deion Barnes. And he did it at Penn State. There's no reason why he can't hear it. Sterling Lucas before him. That's the nutrition program and the strength staff. And I think that if you're in this era of Carolina football under Shane Beamer, where it's kind of been a roller coaster, quite frankly, if you're looking for something that's been consistent, personnel-wise, that's been consistent. And also South Carolina, and this is the part of the topic for tomorrow, they continue to recruit well at the high school level. And if you look at the five stars Shane Beamer's brought into the program, either be it through the transfer portal or otherwise, high school ranks, Harbor and Stewart, they've all stuck. Brownlow Dindy didn't leave. Nick Harbour hasn't left. Dylan Stewart hasn't left. Josiah Thompson came back. And so that's good. That's retention as well. And you need to sign really good players from the high school ranks too. And that's where South Carolina is probably better suited, or in a better position than Ole Miss or Missouri, just because they hit at a higher clip within the state. And then you're close to a lot of talent pockets, Georgia, North Carolina. They go up to Virginia, DC, Maryland, that kind of thing. So I do think that you can't just ignore that. I mean, there could be a couple of true freshman starters this year because they're really good, not because you have to start them. But that's part of it too. And that's why South Carolina is fundamentally a little different than Ole Miss and Missouri. So thank you for coming to my money talk today. Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show. John Strickland's on a Thursday. That's a little different. And so he'll be in. Matt Smith will again co-host. Matt's been a big asset here on the Chief Sports Network. He'll be on along with Steve on Four Quarter Friday, our high school show tomorrow. Alex Jones, no smorgasbord today. He's got to go cover a tennis match, he says. That's interesting. I'm going to ask him. So we got a VHS dates for him later too. So we'll play that on Friday. So we'll kind of have a late night the show mashup on Friday because Matt Anderson's in with us, and we'll have the smorgasbord with Alex on Friday. So it's a Thirsty Thursday with Phil and I. If you want to join Club Chief, join it right there on the YouTube channel. You can get in the ITG chat box and talk with us and I'll answer all the questions. Going to get into some different topics today. That you can tune in for at noon, but the morning show starts at 10. Download the Chief Sports app to stream it all. Don't forget, follow us at Gamecock Show on X, at Inside the Gamecocks on Instagram. Trying to rebuild those channels after the departure from the Big Spur. And also, that's where the news will be when we re-enter the website space. And that probably will not be much longer. So. Anyway, folks, hope you have a wonderful Thursday. JC Sherbert's coffee's over. I'm out. Holla.